evening, everyone. I'll call this Joint Plan Commission Village Board meeting to order. I will do a roll call. Trustee Harris, here. Trustee Atwood is going to be arriving a little bit late. Trustee Rafter, here. Trustee or the President Gass is here. Trustee Dart?
Here.
Trustee Green?
Here.
Trustee Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Colada?
Here.
Mr. Retzloff? We'll excuse him. Kendra Hansen?
Here.
Here. Howard Robb?
Here.
Barb Copperwood?
Here.
Barb's here. And Wes Kronowski?
Here.
Here. Is that it?
Yeah.
I did. Well, welcome. It's nice to have a joint meeting every once in a while to share information and all get it at the same time and to have open discussion between the board and the plan commission, because the board does appreciate and respect all the hard work the plan commission does and all the intricate work that you have to do. So nice to get together once in a while, especially with something as I think major as the corridor study, as we plan the development for two of our major thoroughfares through the village and talk about future development and what would be the best usage and how we can all promote that between the plan commission and the village board and the village as a whole. So welcome to everyone. And with that, is there a motion to either modify or adopt the agenda as presented?
Motion to adopt.
All right, Trustee Rafter.
Second.
Second by Trustee Harris. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Agenda adopted. We'll move directly then into the presentation of the corridor study.
Hi, good evening, everyone. I'm Tanya Fonseca, I'm a planner from Grape.
Well, we have to use the microphones?
I know, just so that they can hear
okay.
Back, if you don't mind.
Sounds great. Okay. And I'm Tanya Fonseca from Grape.
I'm Larry Witzling from Grape. And that's Kendra Hansen from Grape, and also from the village.
1 second.
I don't think it's
going to start coming through. Okay.
Yeah, we'll do this.
Hello?
Let's do my way. I was just singing.
Okay, can everybody hear me now?
No.
Was it on?
I just turned it on.
All right, now?
Not my bed.
Maybe I just needed
closer.
To be really up close to it. Okay.
Hey,
I'm Tanya Fonseca from Grape.
One housekeeping thing. Debbie, can you let the record reflect that Roger is here?
Thank you.
Larry Witzling from Grape.
So we're here to present the Riverside Drive and Webster Avenue Corridor Study. We began in January, and we'll be wrapping up in late June. So we're pretty far along and really excited to share the results, and we just thank you for all of your participation and your feedback throughout the process. It's been really a valuable project. So right now in the process, again, we will be presenting our final time, probably somewhere around July 7th. Throughout the process, we have been coordinating closely with DOT. As you know, they are doing improvements to Riverside Drive. And just as a quick capture, we figured we'd get to some of the fun stuff and show you what the development scenarios will look like going forward.
So we know that you can't see these in any detail. We're going to go into them in some more detail. And over there on the table, we have put out a map that has the different scenarios, and you can, it's sort of like a pop-up book. You can flip over one scenario and see the other scenarios underneath it. But what I wanted to do at the very beginning is explain what these drawings mean and what they don't mean. Lots of people have seen the individual buildings where the driveways and the parking and the landscape goes, and they're thinking that's what gets built. It's not necessarily the case. These are shown in great detail so that we can explain the concepts, but then there's a whole implementation process, and we just wanted to run through that very quickly at the beginning so you understand that these scenarios which show details, they don't get implemented as they're drawn. Everything has to go through this process. The first thing we're recommending is that you incorporate the whole corridor study into or as part of your comprehensive plan. And the reason for that is land decisions, zoning decisions, conditional use permits, all of those things by state law are supposed to be judged as consistent with your comprehensive plan. So this is what gives your corridor plan some teeth, is if you adopt it as an amendment to your comprehensive plan. And to do that, there's going to have to be a lot more community input, your public meetings and hearings. Secondly, there may be some outcomes from these, from this corridor study that suggest you change some of your zoning and land division ordinance text. Right now you have a zoning ordinance, which is a type of zoning ordinance that was started in many communities, I think over 50 years ago, where each zoning category includes all of the ones below it. Sometimes we call that the Russian doll theory of zoning. So you have industrial zoning that also allows everything commercial, and everything commercial allows everything high density, and everything high density allows medium density and residential. That kind of zoning code is not used or suggested as a, in many of the communities where we work. In fact, usually what zoning codes are do is they suggest that the zoning for the land match the existing use of the land. Now, you can think about that, and you will have to consider those issues after the corridor plan is adopted. You might also have to continue some of the site investigations and site analyses to look at some of these projects. What are some of the soil conditions? What are some of the other detailed due diligence things that have to go on before any concept is actually implemented? And then you'll have to probably focus on public-private partnerships and engage individual stakeholders with regard to each of the concepts that we've shown, and look at some of the cost and market models. And we will have some of that information embedded in the corridor study. Think about creating incentives for property owners to undertake some of these projects in ways that will reduce their risk and increase their reward, but also make sure that it serves the public interest. You might have to go over grants, look at potential grants and funding. And then, of course, there are public places and amenities that come out of these concepts as well. And then lastly, none of this happens unless you deal with all of the issues regarding stormwater, infrastructure, utilities, coordination with WSDOT, and the long-term phasing. So these drawings do show a lot of details, but it's not like next year you go out there and build it. All of these ideas have a long road to go for implementation. And Tanya was going to explain this part.
So just a little background information. We're charged with looking at Riverside Drive from 172 up to the Green Bay border, as well as Webster from Green Bay down to 172. A corridor study is more than just the road. We know we're working in tandem with WSDOT and road improvements, but it also encompasses a lot more. Here you've got beautiful riverfront that needs to be considered strongly. You know, the commercial, residential, the trail, of course, is a lot of parking in front and back along the river, but as well as along the corridors in general. And there's a lot of stakeholders, public and private, you know, and it's all layered. It's very complicated, but it all has to be planned in tandem to go forward and really create a strong vision that's implementable for the village. As you know, we were here previously for feedback at open houses. We presented on February 19th and March 19th and gained a tremendous amount of feedback from all of you about what you want to see in the village, and we think that we've incorporated really most of that in here. The priorities really were that there will be some commercial destinations in the community. The community really seems to yearn for kind of a downtown district, but the way the community has been divided over the years, that's challenging but not impossible, and so I think our development scenarios really do present some possibilities for that. Also, a really strong brand and identity is really desired in the community, as well as building on the historic character. The community has a lot of pride in that and really wants to build on that as much as possible. There are a lot of wonderful recreation amenities already, and there's a lot of desire to build on those. There's also some strong desires to improve and strengthen the design standards along the corridor for commercial buildings and signage to make more of a walkable Main Street community feel. And finally, there's some desire and interest in eventually possibly burying the power lines along both corridors of Webster and Riverside. From this, our project roles are that, would be that there are two primary strong commercial corridors in the community, and that there's increased mixed-use redevelopment opportunities. One thing that stood out to us immediately is that there's very few east-west connections through the village, and so there are some opportunities, very few, but some very strong opportunities to really strengthen that in the community and increase connectivity in all of these redevelopment scenarios being presented. Let's see here. I'm going to skip ahead here. So kind of in tandem with that, there's a vision of two corridors. These are what you'll be learning about more in more detail tonight. The development scenarios that we'll be presenting. These are areas that we're seeing as most opportunity. There's not very much developable land in the community right now. And so this plan really builds on that and looks into, these sites as an opportunity to really make the most of what land remains today. These were some east-west connections we saw as strengthening. And right now, a lot of the assets and strengths in the community are your park and recreation spaces, as well as the trails running up the river and the rivers themselves. Right now, something that you're all aware of, it's highlighted in your comprehensive plan and is part of the reason why we've been charged with the study, is that there's a lot of tax-exempt property in the village, and the village has a desire to increase tax revenue and make most of those taxable properties that are remaining. This is the existing TID, which the village may want to consider expanding. Most of the corridor study is within the TID. However, there are a few areas that are not this southern area of Riverside. The Mariner Hotel area, if you will, is not within, as well as some of the diocese property. And if it's to be developed as commercial, it may be one of be considered as part of the TID. And finally, we are doing a market study as part of the plan, which you'll be able to delve into more detail when you read the plan. But just as a quick highlight, we have found that there is a lot of office space in the community. A lot of it is available for lease. There are a lot of properties for sale right now, and I think there's a lot of potential there. And there's some underutilized or undeveloped property that I think holds a lot of potential as well.
So I'm going to go into the detailed concepts for each of the sites. And I should, by the way, how many of you were here at the open house? Okay, so quite a few of you have seen these before, but they'll be new to some of you. So the study, as we did it, and the different drawings we have in the scenarios, worked out to focus on certain sub-areas. We didn't determine that in a top-down way. That really happened by talking to individuals and looking at the different properties and discussing things with staff and others. So one of the areas is the Marine Street area. And I'm going to, instead of starting with the big picture and go down to the smaller pieces, I'm going to start with one of the smaller diagrams. And I don't know if you can read this in the back. Over here it says type of development. And every circle with this color and the letter A represents a mixed-use building. This color and the letter B represents a residential building. The circles with this color are community places, and they represent public boardwalks, such as this area, private garden, such as the, well, that comes further to the south, an elevated public overlook or a public pier. So this is the key, and this key is on all of the scenarios, and you have to look at them in detail to understand how each building and each public place and each circulation element is conceptualized, what we're intending it to be. So in this particular case, we're saying that this is Riverside. This is the way you currently get down to Marine Street. Marine Street becomes a loop, a two-way loop. It goes either way. And this part of Marine Street right here, as it moves southward, rises up. So the parking structure, there's a parking ramp that goes underneath it. This concept only works if all the parcels are developed in a relatively cohesive, integrated manner. It doesn't work if each property owner does something differently. The idea was to create a series of higher-end residential multifamily units with terraces and overlooks that face the river with sufficient parking underneath. It is a very sort of urban concept. It's not unlike parts of what you have around the City Deck area, and we think that it's a very viable concept economically. It will require a lot of investigation to look at the structuring and the soils and the way that it can be built. This is it, looking at it from a slightly zoomed out perspective. And here you can see where we did have this is a private garden, because this piece of the development right here is considered not public. It is private, associated with the landowner. This is the public, more public area where that is accessible. We placed at the end of Derby, this is Derby, right?
Mm-hmm.
The end of Derby Lane, we placed something that kind of a boardwalk or deck that would be at the height of Riverside and is something that you could walk out on to a view of the river. The idea was to create something that could act as a continuation of Derby all the way out to the river's edge. This stays the same as it is currently. This was a second scenario for that same area, and it does look very similar. There's still four buildings. There are still,
five buildings.
The difference here is that what we showed here is that Derby Lane actually crosses over the trail as a street, and that this is a public street, so that you could go either way. You could come from the south and go to the north, or come from the north and go to the south. This would be more expensive, but it would also have other economic advantages. And once again, there's parking underneath these structures. And we have estimated the amount of parking spaces so that we think that the parking ratios will be appropriate for commercial and residential activity. So that was the second scenario. Now, this is an area, Riverside Drive and St. Joseph Street, which we have seen as a potential for different kinds of development. This is the former auto area. The diocese property starts right about here, and this is currently on land which is intended to be sold and redeveloped. We placed four buildings there. This building could be some kind of a mixed-use building, possibly with retail on the lower level. These might be retail uses, and this could be some kind of a residential structure. Again, we've tried to maximize the appropriate parking ratio so that it's economically feasible. And in the report, these letters are all key to the illustration key, so you can see how all of it is conceptualized. As I said earlier, this is not the end of the implementation process. This is just the beginning of the implementation process. So if you adopt the corridor plan as an amendment to your comprehensive plan, this becomes a kind of a template, a measuring stick, if you will, to look at new proposals that come forward. Owners will probably not make proposals that match these diagrams and drawings exactly, but embedded in these drawings are certain principles that we believe represent your public interest as a village. So the buildings here are lined up. They face the street. You're not looking at the parking lots. There are access points into the site. There are green spaces at the south end. And we believe that this would be an advantage for the community as a whole. You can see it here with development further to the west that allows you to come down St. Joseph's and again out to the water's edge. This is a concept in one of the scenarios for property that the diocese currently owns, which is not part of their current thinking for long-term strategy. So this might not happen for 20 or 30 years. The idea, again, is that these concepts don't all go out and get implemented. They get discussed incrementally with landowners if and when those landowners wish to move forward. I believe we spoke to this landowner, and they have a slightly different concept for how this building could be configured. What we showed here was a configuration that would allow some public access straight out to the river and would also navigate I believe there's about a 20-foot drop in the bluff in the space of about 80 feet. So it's a very steep drop, and it needs quite a run in order to get traffic and circulation. These are areas on this property which we think are intended to remain as institutional uses and might be some form of preservation. Again, this isn't a zoning category. It's simply our understanding of how the land is currently used. This was a more ambitious concept for that same area. This is a less ambitious concept where you see less development. And this is an even less ambitious concept, which is a little bit more consistent with what we understand the diocese intends for the future, which is, at this point, not to put anything on that land. And some of it just gets preserved the way it is, and some of it is currently used for institutional purposes. This is what we consider to be the 100% corner of Webster and St. Joseph, and we're going to focus on this area. And you can see here that there are new uses on the south edge of St. Joseph and the west side of Webster. This is a small public plaza, an additional commercial structure. The parking ratios are still adequate. These are the existing bank buildings which we've dotted in, and they could be expanded, they could be changed. This is the bishop's residence. This is actually a drawing that depicts a series of buildings which could easily accommodate a gas station. We're not trying to say that you should or should not have a gas station on that site. Rather, what we're trying to say is that if you do have a gas station, you have to protect the future use of this property so that someday there may be a circulation connection back there. If that doesn't happen today, that's fine. But this is a long-term planning process. And in 10 years or 20 years, there may be some need to create something like this. So if you leave the property alone, that's fine, but you shouldn't do anything to preclude its use for that purpose. Along the north edge here, we showed some potential residential development, which might be consistent with the residential development that already exists further to the north. This is a slightly different version of a similar set of concepts. And in this one, one of the principal differences here is that the current road that is used by the condominium association has been replaced with a new shared street that would service both residential here and the condominium. Now, typically, condominium associations wouldn't want to share the use of a road. We're not saying that they have to. We're simply saying that as the planning process unfolds, this is an option that might be given some consideration. Further north on Webster Avenue, we suggested a couple of things. One is we believe there's a proposal for a new building here. The only thing we proposed that's a little different is we suggested that instead of putting the parking in the front of the building on Webster, that you put it around the sides and in the back, which we think we did the calculation. It's almost the identical number of parking spaces. And then over here, this is Derby Lane, and I forget the name of this.
Garland.
And at our last open house, it was suggested that this connection isn't the best connection, or there isn't a direct connection, and it might be a good idea to reconfigure these streets so that the intersection is a little safer. On Riverside Drive and Alloway, we also made a series of recommendations for how these buildings could be configured and how there could be better connections down to the water's edge. And then lastly, we thought that along St. Joseph, it would be a nice idea if you could try to create a continuous special green space, which we're referring to as the Arboretum Trail, that could connect the Fox River all the way east. I think the next slide shows it, all the way east to the East River. Now, what this trail would consist of is a double row of trees. In some places, you already have that double row of trees, and possibly a larger arboretum-like concept at the east end. And maybe sometime in the future, there might be other environmental areas at the west end that could bookend that environmental sequence. And then we took these different scenarios and we packaged them in a series of drawings that show how they might get combined. This is one version, this is another version, this is yet a third version, and this is a fourth version. I'll just go through those again. Actually, it's much easier to see the differences when you flip through them quickly. They can be combined in many different ways. We're not suggesting that there's one best way of doing it. And again, we're not suggesting that each property owner needs to build exactly what's in here. But we are suggesting that these concepts be used as the basis, be adopted as part of your comprehensive plan, and that as landowners come forward and make changes in their property, that they consider these possibilities. And again, we'll leave that drawing here if you like. Now, implementation. One of the things that we've done is we've created a matrix that takes each of the different areas and all of the issues that need to be implemented and correlates them. So, types of implementation activities, incorporating the corridor plan into the comprehensive plan, and this is just the column from Marine Street, incorporating the corridor plan into the comprehensive plan is critical. Changing the zoning and land division ordinances. The Marine Street concept could be implemented as a planned development district or as an overlay zone. There are several ways of doing that. Continuing site investigation and analysis. That is not necessary for all the sites, but for the Marine Street site, it would be very critical for the roads, the structure, pilings, and other basic costs. Focus on public to private partnerships. That's going to be critical for the Marine Street area, not necessarily for the other areas. And then there's something like strengthen the trails. Well, we don't really think that's a very critical thing on Marine Street. The trails are essentially embedded in there. Addressing the stormwater issues, we think that's essentially already taken care of from a regulatory perspective. So for each of the different areas, we have this chart that says what needs to be looked at in terms of implementation. We're still working on the chart. It will be there when we finish. Let's see. I'll come back to how to contact us. Just for sake of argument, we know we're not expecting you to read any of these things, but we want you to know that it's in there. This is a detailed analysis of potential TIF revenue for the whole project. If everything was built out and you charged TIF and you got the TIF increment from all of these structures at the end of 27 years, I forget what we calculated, a low and a high number. It was from, 98 to 116 million. So that's a lot of TIF revenue, but that's if everything gets built and it's there for 27 years. If you're only doing it for 9 or 10 years, it might be a lot less, especially because it's built incrementally. So after 10 years, it might only be $4 or $5 million in revenue. But there is substantial revenue that's out there. We also have some street design guidelines, which we'll talk about all the individual components of street design. And I'm just going to flip back. That's how you can get a hold of us. So that was a rather whirlwind tour, but we wanted to make sure that you saw everything. We're still working on it. We're due back here in June.
July
with the final report. And we're happy to take questions or comments or talk about any of the details.
Thank you. I appreciate the presentation and the work that's gone into it. What I would do with this one, let me open up the Plan Commission to see if they have any questions of the consultant concerning what's been presented tonight. More to come in July, apparently. But it seems to me to be a very good start. Anybody from the board have any comments or questions? Let's see, Rapp.
Larry, in your report, are you going to be giving us any vision of what the architectural look and feel? You showed some pictures up at the end of park-like areas and all that.
This is a definitive maybe, because it's not in our contract to do that. If we have an extra nickel, we will try to, because we would like to do that. But there are risks of showing that kind of stuff, because then people think that's what we're getting. And what we're trying to do is start the journey, so to speak. And if we can give you an overall SketchUp model, we would like to do that.
To your earlier point of branding, create a brand, right?
Yes.
That's why we want to do this in part.
Actually,
creating a brand without a vision.
Well, I see what you're saying. Well, in terms of developers, the brand actually comes from the implementation, right? Ultimately, that's what changes everybody's image of Alloway. And if I can flip back, how do I flip back quickly? I wanted to go to the diagram that showed the four key corners.
Four key corners. Of
yeah, you're the diagram created. I think I can.
This one?
No. Keep going. One more. I think, yeah, that's the one. Okay.
Sorry, everyone.
In terms of branding, specifically, one of the things that we saw was that these four intersections, the Village Center, where St. Joseph's, it's Webster, where St. Joseph's and Riverside intersect, where Derby Lane connects with Marine Street, and possibly right over here, those four corners in our minds started to create this quadrant within the village. And we think that the long-term branding of changing everybody's image of Alloway is sort of somewhat dependent about doing something at each of those corners. So if 5 years from now there was a new structure at each one of these corners, that would immediately, I think, start people who drive through and around to say, Alloway's not the same anymore. Something different is going on. The next step, we think, in the branding is making sure you can get to the water, right? That's the hugest asset, but it's not like you can't get there, but it's just not celebrated, it's not pushed, it's not assertive connections, and we're hoping to suggest and see that you do that. Now, if we can get a couple of 3D images that show that, we will try to do that.
We also previously in community meetings shared visual preference images, which we received a lot of feedback on, so it may be possible we could fold that in, but just with that precursor that, you know, we're not dictating or prescribing that that's what the developments look like, but that is, you know, what the community identified with during this process.
I thought that was exactly why you had those pictures at the open houses, because we were going to come forward with that type of thing.
You know, I will go back and check again. Maybe I'm wrong about what it said in our contract, and we do. If it's in our contract, of course we'll do it. But I think that when we structured it, it really wasn't quite enough to do all of those things and provide the images. But we would like to do that.
I would like you to do that too.
Well, it's not the contract. We're going to revisit the contract. Roger, I see what you're referring
to. Part of the initial rationale for this, I think, came from the DOT asking how they should consider future development.
Roger.
Sorry. Part of the original rationale for the corridor study came from the DOT. Wondering what sort of commercial development they should consider in the future as they plan the road. So what recommendations are you going to have for the reconstruction of Riverside and possibly Webster to accommodate these future plans?
Let me go to the other end of the presentation now. We've had several discussions with the DOT, and they have focused on some very simple sets of issues. The first set of issues was, what are the intersections going to be designed like? We have still not seen any definitive final versions. Right now, I think none of the
intersection drawings that we've seen include roundabouts. Is that right, Tanya? Mm.
Not yet.
That doesn't mean there won't be some. We have done our drawings on the presumption that there weren't any, and we've tried to identify where the pedestrian crossing should go and where the curb cut should go. And we know that the DOT will probably try to minimize some of those curb cuts and driveways, and we've tried to figure out ways that we can maintain the property rights and the existing and future uses and still, on occasion, be consistent with the DOT's goal of cutting down some of the access points. We've talked to the DOT about that on the phone a couple of times, and as far as we can tell so far, what we're doing is consistent with what they're planning. We have also talked amongst ourselves a little bit about the street design guidelines and what the street cross sections should be like. We know that the DOT has the CSS committee. CSS, for those of you who don't know, stands for Context Sensitive Solutions, and that usually refers to how the streetscaping, that usually includes how streetscaping decisions are made along the sides of each road. And we are going to be presenting a list of things that we think should be included in that. And I'm trying to remember where we had the diagram here. So we think that in terms of the streetscaping, there should be very clearly a distinct set of streetscape guidelines for Webster, a separate set of recommendations for Riverside, and possibly different recommendations for each of the east-west streets, Alloway, St. Joseph's, and Derby. And then in addition, there is a section of Riverside in here where there's very little access because of the cemetery and the bluffs to the east, and we're going to make a separate set of recommendations for that street cross-section. Some of you may have seen these kinds of street cross-sections where it really should be a more rural concept, and yet there's a traditional street light every 60 feet and benches and all the other things that go with an urban concept. And while that may make sense on Webster and parts of Riverside, we think there are other parts of Riverside that should be left in a more scenic and rural character. And so we are going to make those suggestions in a list for each of these different street areas, and that will be part of the final report that goes to DOT.
Could you please email us your presentation?
I'm sorry?
Could you please email us a copy of your presentation?
Yes, of course. But remember, this is a draft.
Oh, yes, I get that. And stamp right. Draft all over it when you save it as PDF.
Yes, we'll probably put the word draft on every page because I think the Gazette actually published something tonight, right?
They did.
Yeah, it doesn't say draft on it. And it was a very nice write-up. There was nothing controversial. But as you all know, whenever we do a drawing that has that much detail on it, it has the potential to create conflict because people will look at it and say they put a specific feature right where some necessary component of my business is located. And we don't intend to do those sorts of things. So we will. Should we just send it to you, Trevor?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You referred to the intersection of Webster and St. Joseph as 100% corner, and I understand that concept. On that video that you had up, that video, but the other one where you showed the different... keep going. You're getting there.
That one?
Well, actually, it was the one that showed all the different areas, the village center, riverfront, neighborhood, shoreline development, the waterfront.
Oh, the core four?
Yeah. And you have the little white boxes showing there we go.
Oh, okay.
Now, I see the Webster Avenue and the St. Joseph there where you have Village Center. Are those other, for lack of a better description, white boxes, are those other 100%
no.
areas, or are they...
No, they're just key intersections, and when you do this kind of diagram, you always have to decide how complicated do you make it, how simple do you make it. We maybe have oversimplified it, or we should just indicate that this one is a much more special circumstance, as is this one. I think the Marine Street intersection, it's actually the Derby Lane and Riverside intersection, if you can get a Marine Street development going, is a huge game changer in terms of image, as is this one right here at the Village Center. If I had to pick two to change the brand and the image of Alloway, those are the two that I would pick. If I had to pick one, I'd probably go with whichever one had the greatest traffic count. I mean, one of the unfortunate realities of branding is you have to reach as many people as you can, and that depends usually on traffic count.
I think logistically, although we all love the urban waterfront and Main Street concept, I think logistically the Village Center one is probably the higher possibility for the most dynamic ability for being able to be worked with because of the logistical problems within the urban waterfront structure.
Absolutely right. This one does not require a lot of coordination between the four corners. So you can have somebody on the southwest corner do something without any cooperation from any of the other three. And sometimes that really helps. Whereas the Marine Street concept obviously requires land assembly, major investigation of capital costs, partnerships, all those other things. And in fact, one of the things we were talking to Brad and Trevor about is when the report is done, one of the things we might want to do, the village might want to do, is bring in a group of developers for a briefing and saying, the village wants to do some of these things. Here are the different ideas. You step up to the plate, so will we. This is what we're looking at.
And would you be available to speak in regards to that concept if and or when
these
developers were there?
Yeah. You know, we just interviewed for another job recently, and implementation came up, and one of the things we said is the last thing we ever want to do is write another shelf plan. It just, as planners, it doesn't make us feel good at all to have plans sit on the shelf. So absolutely, if we can help talk to developers and make things happen, that would be great. Hopefully, maybe before we're done.
Any other questions? Chris?
Hopefully it's time. Excellent. I guess two questions. One is for the Marine Street. I guess that development by itself and the possibility, it kind of scares me a little bit as a volunteer just because I think of what happened to Schwabenheim with their development that seemingly failed with the marina. It's kind of a similar isolated parcel. Do you guys consider kind of what happened in the Schwabenheim, and do you think it's viable for the village to develop?
Well, first, we recently got hired by the Schwabenheim to redo their comprehensive plan. And they have a very different set of challenges. But we were very concerned about the market here. This is the version which we think is easier to do of the two scenarios, because all that's required here is building a pedestrian bridge across from the edge of Riverside across the trail, which we know can be done. You don't need to do any traffic counts. The other thing about this concept is, is you can do this piece completely independently of this piece, because this doesn't require the continuation of the parking structure. It's very complicated, but the parking that's below this portion of Marine Street could actually end right here. What is required, however, is that these properties be planned and integrated as one parcel, or at least one structural system, because in order to get enough parking for this density, you have to put some parking
under the street and you have to raise the street, that is not an easy thing to do. And so we have drawings back at our office of where we think that parking can go. We also started talking to some of our structural engineers about the pilings. And then we said, you know what? We are just so far ahead of ourselves. We have to stop. So as much fun as it was to think about all those things, we stopped. But that is why this is a very difficult challenge. We have to find out what's required in terms of due diligence and what it would cost. And then after you come up with that cost estimate, start talking to the owners about joint ventures.
Then I have a second question, also for Marine Street, for your scenario two. And that, if I understood it correctly, Derby Lane would go over Riverside?
Derby Lane continues on the west side of Riverside, but Derby Lane would go over the trail.
And so I guess that's my question, concern, is because the Fox River State Trail is a federally protected rails to trails, would you have the clearance if it ever would go back?
You would not have the rail clearance. Okay, and so one of the key issues here, obviously, is going back and talking to the DNR about those things. What we have been told, and I forget where we heard it or how we heard it, is that is a regulation, but there are many, many exceptions to it.
That's something I'd recommend the village take a look at very seriously, because like even the Caudalie Bridge, I used to work at DOT for 15 years, I don't anymore. When that bridge was built, there's a false facade, and so that could, if it ever would go back to a rails to trails, there's always that risk. And I know Fox River Trail is one of the busiest state trails, it probably will never go back to a rails to trails, but that would be a tremendous burden on the taxpayer if we build some infrastructure improvements that might go away if a railroad ever would come back. I mean, that's the intent of the rails.
You're absolutely right. So. And so that, in fact, that was the reason we had actually started with a discussion with this concept, and when we got to the point you just made, we very quickly switched to this concept, because if this is a pedestrian bridge, just this little piece right in there could obviously be a lift piece.
Right.
And that's not a very expensive thing to do if it's a pedestrian bridge.
But a road.
but a road is a different matter. So, yes, that's... And when we talk about site investigation and analysis, all of those things are there. There's some other little features, not here, but in a couple of other places. We also changed minor tweaks to the alignment of the trail, which would change the development potential for some of the pieces of property. And that's also something that needs to be looked at, because, again, that's also not quite consistent with the regulatory system. And then the one other feature... I don't see it here. Well, anyhow, I'll stop there. Thank you.
All right. Bob.
I like both of the scenarios you showed. That's the problem. As to the
good.
as to the percentage of viability of traffic flow in relation to economic development and or financial income for that district, it would seem as though there is more trouble, but there must be one over the other in regards to generation of income in regards to businesses themselves. Have you looked at that?
We're going to have that TIF analysis, but what I would, not in the detail that a developer would want to know it. And every time I've done one of these projects for a developer, the very first thing we always do is we count the number of parking spaces. And the developers will tell you, in this market, for this kind of brokerage circumstances, we need either 1.1 space per unit or 2 spaces or 1.8, whatever it is. We get that number, we divide it out, and we say that's the maximum number of residential units we can look at. Then we look at these building footprints. We typically get one unit on average every 30 feet of facade on both sides, because it's a double-loaded corridor. And then we go from that to figure out what the height of the buildings is. It's sort of it's working your way out of a maze backwards. Start at the end and go find the entry point as quickly as you can. Now, that doesn't include parking for retail and restaurants. And so we also have some opportunities for that as well. And we also have some parking on the street itself. So the answer to your question is we like both scenarios too. Both of them have to get investigated with that kind of detailed marketing.
Did I see somewhere on one of those graphics a ramp?
Yes. Right here it says ramp. Not because it's a parking ramp, but because there is a ramp, there's a pedestrian bicycle ramp, and I believe there's one right, I think it's right here. I know this is a little hard to see.
So the road also ramps down there?
Mm-hmm. Right. This ramps down here, but...
So you're talking physical structure, not physical, but geographical ramp as opposed to physical structure.
Sometimes there's a parking ramp, and sometimes we put in what we consider a bicycle pedestrian ramp to get people down from Riverside down to the trail and into the development area.
A side question in relation to this. How wide is the average parking spot?
You know, in my world of development, the average park, there's no average. It's 9 feet.
9 feet.
Now, there are some communities that say that's not big enough for our typical vehicles, and they make them 10 feet. I've never seen any parking lot where it's 9 feet have to be changed. Some shopping centers a while ago actually moved to 8 foot 9 inches because it was easier, they could get more cars. And typically what happens is they're very sophisticated models that our traffic engineers use. And what is the probability that you're going to get four wide pickups in a row versus a pickup in a small car and a pickup in a small car? And the odds are in favor that it's all going to work itself out. So 9 feet is what we use, 9 by 18, with a 24-foot wide central bay if it's double loaded. Unless, Kendra, is that about right? Or?
And that's pretty much standard for most of the developments that you've been in
Yes, for at least 20 years. Right. So the average 300 square feet per parking space plus circulation, which is about 10%. For some reason, we know those numbers better than everything else because that's the foundation of your use.
Any other questions about the Board of the Plan Commission?
Sure. What is going to generate a measurable increase in pedestrian use or pedestrian access to these developments, and do we need any additional changes in our housing patterns or densities to accommodate this?
There are very, very few studies nationally, it's in fact we've even been thinking about getting into this business, of doing pedestrian traffic impact analysis. We know how many cars there are for different uses, but we just don't know how many pedestrians are generated. What we can sort of just tell from our own observations, I'm sure as you walk around as well, is that you tend to get the two kinds of generators for pedestrian activity. One is the special event. It's the music festival. It's the outdoor celebration of something or other. The other, which is far more important, much more elusive and difficult to understand, is what we would consider everyday pedestrian generation. People walking to a shop, a store, or what have you. Typically, that kind of everyday pedestrian activity occurs around food service of some kind. It's the coffee shop, it's the lunch space, it's the bar in the evening. And so we think that restaurant and entertainment uses, it doesn't have to be a lot, at the ground level of those buildings will generate pedestrian activity. And if it becomes a place that people like to walk, then coming down Derby and crossing over the street and out to the edge of the water will generate some pedestrian activity. You also have the bicycle trail. And we think that, and again, I'm not sure of DOT and DNR rules on bicycle trails, but the last time I tried to create a spot for people to stop and get off the trail, it was almost as hard as getting a freeway interchange. Because bicycles have to be regulated, and you're not allowed to cross those paths. But I do think that the bicycle trail and the hiking will generate a lot of good weather uses for that area. And we also talked a little bit to Brad about the kayaks and the canoeing and summertime access. I know where I live in Milwaukee, well, you may remember this, Roger. There's a place along the Milwaukee River called the Ale House, and it has
a kayak and canoe spot down at the bottom, and I was sitting there drinking a beer, and a couple canoe up to the dock, hop out of their canoe, put their canoe on the dock, and come up and have lunch. I'd never seen that before. So we're thinking that this intense combination of activities could generate some pedestrian activity. The other place we're hoping that, way at the back end, is that Arboretum Trail. We think that the notion that people might want to walk from the East River over to the Fox River, make it educational, make it bike-friendly, make it pedestrian-friendly, make it exercise, jogging, and hiking-friendly, and you might actually see some activity, especially if it happens to intersect what we're calling the Village Center, and we made this space an urban plaza intentionally at what we call the 100% corner. The other thing about public places that's important to know in terms of pedestrian activity is that it's very easy to make them fail by making them too big, because pedestrian places feel better when there's more activity in them. People go to pedestrian places to see other people, to have a social experience. If you want to walk out in the woods, that's great. There's lots of woods to walk in. If you want a social experience, it has to be tighter and more intensive. And so we created a very small urban plaza here. We're hoping that something like that Arboretum Trail and some of the activity here could make that a more active zone. So again, to go back to that old diagram, if we can get it up at Riverside and Derby and Marine, and we can get it down here at the 100% Center, it would start to make a difference. And just to give you another little story about this potential plaza location, there are a lot of designers who would say, no, why would you ever put the plaza next to all those cars? And the answer is simple, because you want everybody driving by to see people sitting out there at doing something. That's what changes the brand and the image of the community, is when you see somebody else enjoying themselves in an outdoor space.
Jeff? Larry, in terms of the mixed use, I know you got a lot of input from residents during your sessions on the types of businesses they'd like to see. Will that be summarized in the report, or the types of businesses that you would recommend if we were to go out and recruit developers and businesses?
Well, we will mention what people said, but most of the types of retail uses that you'll get will be completely market dependent. And we'll talk about those uses. Basically, as you increase the amount of residential development, you create a market for more retail development. The one thing I will say about market analyses is that you have to be very... There probably isn't an unmet market anywhere in Wisconsin. Right? If people can afford to buy groceries and they know where the grocery store is, they're going to get them. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with going to the coffee shop. So it's all about competition. It's all about making a better experience for going to that coffee shop, that restaurant, that grocery store. And we think that you can do some of that, but it'll take creative entrepreneurs to be able to do that.
Any other questions, comments? Chris?
Thank you. One last question on the slide, seeing you have it up. The trail concept's a good one, but I just am curious. The implementation, there's a lot of homes, residences, and trails don't necessarily, they aren't safe where there's a lot of conflict points. And has there been any thought of how you did that?
Yes.
And also, what's the impact of the neighborhoods that live along the corridor? I mean, they can lose parts of their yard, and all of a sudden, I mean, I could see a number of concerns. Is there another alternate that maybe it's not?
But first of all, we tried to put the trail on the north side of St. Joseph, mm-hmm. which I don't think... It may have included a block of residential, but most of the residential is on the south side.
Okay.
And our goal was to try to keep the trail, not just the sidewalk, but back a ways, and make it more like just a simple sidewalk through some trees, so it doesn't have a non-residential character to it. There is that beautiful ravine trail through the diocese land that may or may not happen someday. Right now, that's really not on the boards is something that could occur, but it is a beautiful environmental experience. Hopefully we can get people straight down to the
to the river and then moved north and south. The Milwaukee River Walk was drawn, I think, in the 1930s. And then it was, I think the first step they took towards building it was in the 1980s. And they're still trying to fill in some of the blanks. So we're suggesting you get it started. If it's not an arboretum trail, at least it's a sidewalk.
I think it's a great idea. It's just I've seen too many trails fail where they put them in our residential areas. There's a lot of homes, and all of a sudden there's all these crashes, and they're saying it's a trail, but it's not safe. So thank you.
So there are no studies at all on walking studies anywhere that are generated, I mean, even from Brown County or the planning commission?
You mean if you go to a traffic engineer and you say, if I put these uses out there, how many pedestrians will I generate per an hour on a peak time?
I'm not interested in that. Yeah.
They don't know. I mean, I'm extremely disappointed in this because this is our livelihood. And one of the reasons we might be able to, if you can find one, let me know.
Well, I was just curious because when the folks were here from the Department of Transportation, they showed us their model for Riverside Drive. They showed us computer-generated graphics that showed automobiles. Mm-hmm. And I asked, I think they probably didn't like me for it, but I asked, okay, I see where all the white dots are moving for the automobiles. Where are the little people that are supposed to be walking along there? And there was nothing.
It's because, we think it's because that as of yet, there hasn't been really a strong demand for that kind of pedestrian modeling. There is something which you've all heard, and DOT knows it, and everybody else knows it, it's called pedestrian friendly. But pedestrian friendly and pedestrian active are different concepts. And you can have the friendliest pedestrian street in the world and no pedestrians on it. And you can have a really unfriendly pedestrian street and it's totally jammed. And so those kinds of traffic generator models I haven't been able to find.
Are there cities, villages, towns that you are aware of that have something similar to that, a pedestrian active format or something?
There are some consultants who do pedestrian counts, and occasionally you'll see people standing on the corner going like this with a counter to see how many pedestrians are walking by. But the more important issue, which doesn't get analyzed, is why are they there? Is it because of the number of entrances to shops? Is it because of the density of the surrounding neighborhood? Is it because of the specific types of uses? I had my students once on Brady Street in New York, in Brady Street in Milwaukee, identify the hours of operation for all the businesses. So you could see who's open at night, who's open on the weekend. It's even more complicated than plain old traffic generation, and I haven't seen any studies that really give you a good analysis of it. As Roger's question implied, if you could analyze that and you said, okay, you put these five uses here with this much density and you'll automatically have an active pedestrian street, we'd all make a lot of money from that because that's a desirable concept.
I guess I'm a little off point on trying to be clear, and that is that are you aware of communities at which you would be able to look, access the internet, and see pictures of communities that have successful
pedestrian environments.
Not saying that we want the analysis of it or anything else, but just an idea for us to look at, to get a concept of, you know, okay, well, not that we're experts or anything, but we never will be, but that we would have an idea, at least, of a general idea of what draws people or what looks right, what concept is there that people are drawn to.
Yeah, and we can certainly include, this is for specific street sections, but we can certainly include that. Typically, what you see is a multi-story residential building with retail on the ground floor. There's one other study I have seen that talks about pedestrian activity, or things that encourage pedestrian activity, and it's parallel parking. Parallel parking, when people walk on the street, of course they like it to look pretty, but they also want to feel safe. And when you're walking by the curb, if it's a traffic lane right next to you, it feels less safe and secure than if there's a parking lane next to you. So even though parallel parking
isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. It's actually a pretty good thing for pedestrians because you feel like you're nobody's going to come crashing through that car.
Thank you. Any other questions by the plan commission or the board? Questions, comments? And then there's a fair number of people in attendance, so maybe hearing no objection, I'd like to suspend the rules. And if anyone in the public wants to comment, I'd request that you step up to the podium and state your name and address and ask a question or give a comment if you so wish. Jim?
You can stay there, Jim. You don't have to.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. The DOT did actually say that they're not going to consider general plans, and they only want to make adjustments to the road if there's something immediately going to happen. So I kind of like to encourage us to move fast track and work with any of the developers to make sure that we get that on the agenda. They said that all the communities have all these grand plans, but they never come to fruition, so they're not going to give us curb cuts and traffic lights and that type of stuff. So we're looking at traffic warrants and that type of thing. So we need to move forward with whatever plans we have and encourage the developers to do something sooner rather than later so that they can cut down their future costs.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Anybody else in the public wish to comment or ask a question? Sir?
I have a question.
You can stay there, too.
Okay. I'm Bob Baller, and I live on Arrowhead Drive, 529. The concept looks very interesting, but how does this fit with the Department of Transportation wanting to put in a four-lane highway with bike lanes and sidewalks and widening our street now from about 49 feet to 98 feet? Yeah, Riverside Drive. Now, as we come to where you are, there isn't a heck of a lot of space to work with. Now, they haven't given, at least we've been gone for 6 months, we're out of here in the winter. But we don't have any sense of where that plan has gone and what they're going to do with this, because it seems to me they wanted to build a bike trail or bike lanes and walking sidewalks so these people could go from one end to nowhere. Now, ultimately, it could lead into this. But they haven't given us the conclusion that they're going to accept our objections because we have homes in our area that are going to lose their garages. And so I'm saying this plan better be somewhat entwined with what the Department of Transportation is trying to do. And there's no reason why those of us as citizens who have been really objecting to what the DOT wants to do. I think that from a citizen's point of view, this is grandiose. But if we got to have bike trails to get people to you when there's a bike trail just down near the river, it makes no sense. So I think that's a combination of problems that I would see. And I hope that your planning committee is well aware of what the DOT is doing that we don't see from.
We are. We do coordinate with them. All of our development scenarios do accommodate the proposed right-of-way. And from our understanding, we have had conversations with them and discussed, you know, that there is a trail that exists that's widely used. However, just legally, they cannot allow that to be the bike accommodation because it's not plowed in the winter and it's not free for all. And so there is that sticking point there that requires them then to have bike lanes on either side of the road. I think one consideration is not having sidewalks on both sides along the entirety of the corridor. Some of the areas, physically, there are constraints where they couldn't anyway, such as along the retaining wall on Riverside on the northern end. And so you all may, because you just had a meeting with them, they know more about that than we even do.
And how will they get the people through underneath I-43 or 172? And then look beyond that, where we have several residences with a new home going up right now, right alongside of the street. And we have a historic historic place in the Cold State on the opposite side. Well, where would, how are these people going to come to you except from these corridors? And I asked about Derby. And I think if I lived on Derby, I wouldn't be very happy to see everybody crossing to get down from there. When you have a railroad trestle, you have that wall, and you have a drop-off on the other side, there's hardly room for two lanes of traffic right now. So this doesn't make sense to me, I guess is what I'm saying. And I've said enough.
Well, just so you know, DOT's plans and our plans are not 100% coordinated. We try our best to keep up with them. They try to keep up with us. But they're two separate parallel tracks. Their final plans and the dates for presentation and comment are in a separate calendar than ours are. We have identified a few places. For example, I think this is correct. Anybody who knows differently, jump in here. But I think that on this section of Riverside Drive, there's a planned sidewalk on the west side that ends right about here. And that at this point, there would be a pedestrian crossing. Now, whether it's right here or right here or right here, I don't know. But they have told us that that's likely. So when they tell us that, we try to accommodate that concept in our drawings. The dimensions that you mentioned, the dimensions are all extraordinarily complicated because they talk about there's curb to curb, there's right of way, there's where the traffic lanes are located within the right of way, and they're down to feet and inches. And I know that the bicycle lane is still a very controversial issue. And I'm not sure where they're coming out with their final.
So far, it's just a 3-foot accommodation on either side.
It's a 3-foot accommodation, right? There are also, I think, 14 different types of bike accommodations, mm-hmm. each of which have slightly different dimensional properties.
I appreciate your response, but I think it's terribly important that our board and the village of Elway understand what they're creating on the highway. Than bringing something like this along and dividing up that section where you're supposed to go, bicycle trail, from the edge of Tapir to the edge of Green Bay. And it seems to me we're going to have a lot of people going nowhere and then have to walk and get around some ways and continue to go on. And I think that the village has to be very cognizant of this because it looks like a waste of. And I'm looking at the cemetery, and we happen to be Catholic, and we happen to have places in that cemetery waiting for us. But I'm looking at that coming down the Alloway Avenue, and there's an awfully lot of property right there that is just built right out of the sidewalk as far as drains. And I think that's a crucial factor. I don't think those drains need to be interrupted.
Well, and there's been quite a bit of change conceptually from what the plans were some 6 or 8 months ago to where the concept presently is today. And there's been a lot of reduction in terms of the scope of the project, and it's still a work in progress. In fact, there was a meeting last week, correct? And what's the next plan meeting, or do we have one?
It's a public meeting in the middle of June, okay. But it's not scheduled yet.
And I think on June 2nd, the DOT was going to do a brief update to the village board as to where they're at right now. And
will that be at the June 2nd meeting?
Yeah.
Board meeting?
Correct. And you're correct. In the middle of June, they're hoping to get a public participation meeting to allow for the public to come in and voice their concerns.
Well, and a number of us have done a lot of that up to this point, and we don't have any sense of whether we're listening or hearing. And I suppose this is not our business.
Well, I think it's your business 100%, but what they were talking at last week, I hope I'm not mistaken what I heard, but the roadbed overall footprint of the road was 2 feet wider on each side, so it's over 4 feet than what it currently stands today. Still, it's widening. But it's a lot less than what it did.
That's right.
They presented 6 months ago.
16 feet on the
yes.
changed the widths of some of the lanes too, and they accommodated the changes for some of the islands that were in there. They also made some burns in regards to where sidewalks would be put in. There are some places that were moving. And the accommodation is changing the size of the bike lane itself that they talked about. They previously talked about being, I want to say 5 feet, but don't quote me on that. It, but as it was mentioned, it's down to 3 feet in many areas. So there have been some changes, and it's a work in progress. And hearing from you is the most important thing that it's just for us, so that we know we can hear you tell us and tweak our ears and inch our toes and tell us what you want, because that's the only way.
So keep looking at the village website. Look for the minutes and then the agendas, because not that the DOT hears us on everything, but at least so far they've held a number of meetings to share the concepts and receive input. And the board has been in quite a bit of contact with them. And I understand the consultants are going to be giving them their recommendations in terms of what the roads should look like as well. So board input, plan commission input, consultant input, public input. Hopefully we get Riverside Drive to the point where everybody can look at it and nod their head and go, that's okay. And what we have to understand is that there was the very early plan that was pretty egregious. The one I think you're talking about 6, 8, 9 months ago. But the reason it looks so bad is because they have to make it look bad. Because there's a certain federal regulation that says design all of these components into it. Throw everything in but the kitchen sink. And then once you've done that, then you have to look at what's cost effective, what's really necessary. Then you see it start scaling itself back down. But I think they almost have to start there. Throw in everything but the kitchen sink and then look at all the exceptions to the federal mandates and then bring the project into something much more reasonable. So keep on top of that. Keep on top, because they're going to hold several more public input sessions. We want everybody to come and talk about it. And you'll see, the project does change over time. The concept changes, and it has changed in the last 6 months. It's going to change again in the future. But eventually they will, reach a final version of the plan. So we want to make sure that everybody, from the board to the public, the plan commission, to our consultants, everybody has a chance to tell them what they think, so that we get as much out of this as we can. And because, it is a major thoroughfare right through our village.
The other thing I would suggest that everybody be in tandem is the speed limit. We live on an arrowhead, and we have to go out and turn right, or we have to turn left. And with the speed that comes through there, it's far beyond 35 miles an hour. And I remember the DOT guy saying, well, we'll let the people decide what the speed should be. And if they're going to go 45, then we'll post it at 45. If they go 55, what is this walking across into the, or what does that do to that? It just kind of destroys the whole effect. And there are times when you really don't go out and try to turn on your side right now because of the drastic amount of traffic, because of the GV detour, and the speed that they come through is just impossible to fight.
And that's why there's certain components of the plan that are meant to lessen speed. There's certain traffic control devices, how you construct things that have been shown to make people slow down a little bit. And that's why part of the plan as well is focusing on safe areas to cross Riverside. Because in my estimation, there aren't really any as we sit here today. So there are going to be some of those elements that are incorporated into the plan as the plan goes forward. But getting people safely across Riverside Drive is definitely something the village is very much concerned with. And I think the DOT gets it. Some of those concepts are being put into the plan to try to get people at certain designated points safely across Riverside, because you take your life in your hands as it exists today. Any other public comment? Okay, thank you folks for your input. Oh, sir.
Just a quick question to Larry. If the person had that arboretum concept involved in there on St. Joseph, would that greatly reduce the speed traffic that would, because it would go from one, way across?
Well, the intention would be that where those pedestrian crossings occur,
that a greater effort is made to use whatever devices we can to slow the traffic, whether it's signage or curb bump outs in some locations or the way the pedestrian walk is striped. Where can we get traffic signals and things of that nature? But yeah, that would be the goal, is to get that to be a safer, slower.
So that image or that branding that you were referring to before, that might be one of those areas where it would enhance the situation to reduce the traffic slowly.
I think certainly at the corner of Webster and St. Joseph's, you could do that. I don't know how much of an impact it has on the Riverside.
Okay. Yeah.
Sir, can we get your name for the record?
John Scholbo.
All right. Thank you, sir. Any other public comment? Wayne Glenn.
Name is Stuart Schmaker, St. Francis Drive. Would the developers, would they be the ones to try to acquire property, or do you own a piece of property in this area that you don't want to develop for them? Or would the county do that?
I'm sure, I don't think, did you ask, would developers be the ones that would try to acquire property?
Correct.
We're certainly not recommending that the village acquire property. At least certainly, or only if it was a voluntary mutual arrangement. Where I don't think we've suggested that local governments take property in 25, 30 years. The only people I know do that are still the DOT and the electric utility company. So most of what we're proposing would have to be occur by mutual agreement between a willing buyer and a willing seller. Very often that is a developer with the local property owner, homeowner, or commercial owner. Once in a while, it's between a private property owner and the public sector, but typically developers are much more capable of doing that sort of thing.
Well, I think the important thing, as Larry indicated before, is that we don't want to make this a shelf plan. We get it and stick it on a shelf and it collects dust. I think the village's intention is that we be very proactive with this and have meetings. You know, once the final plan is developed, the board's had a chance to digest it, plan commission's had a chance to digest it, and then to actually approach the property owners and say, look, here's some good things that can happen for you. You know, let's project, you know, what kind of revenues you might see if you develop it like this. Mm-hmm. And then they may agree. Or they may say, no, I'm not interested, but then we'll talk to developers. They have developers knock on their door and say, you know, we're willing to pay X and we'll develop Y and we think we can make some money. It's going to be a public-private partnership. And with the TID district in there, the village and the municipality can offer some incentives to make it all happen. Roger.
Could I kind of extend that discussion a little more by asking, are there some mechanisms the village could employ to entice developers to assemble parcels and begin a development?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of things that the village could do to entice developers. The first thing is actually what we talked about making a presentation to them and explaining to them that the village is interested in cooperating with developers. Second kind of strategy, which we've also often recommended, that's consistent with what you're talking about, TIF and TID incentives, is you try to make it clear to developers that the purpose of the TIF and the TID incentive is to reduce their risk and the village's risk. After your fifth development and after the market is going along, there's not so much risk anymore. And therefore, the fifth developer should not get as much of an incentive as the first developer. And we've often said, you make a really good sweetheart deal with the first one in the door, because that's what you really have to get going. Second one in the door, okay. But if you got those two corners going, the northwest one and the southeast one, maybe the other two is a little bit less of an incentive. So the TIF and the TID incentive structure is quite critical. The other is the approval process and how quickly that can be done. One way to do that is to adopt what's called an overlay zone, which is kind of like a, sometimes it's called an overlay zone, sometimes it's just a village-sponsored plan development district, where you say, we have the underlying zoning that stays there, but we also have this overlay zone. And if you want to do what's in the overlay zone,
we're going to get you through the process really quickly. Another thing that you can do is to sort of prime the pump with the least expensive due diligence stuff at the front end, not the heavy lifting, but some of what you can already information you can already gather and make available to developers. You could, financing is always an issue. You can talk to local brokers and find out what they can do, and what who they know and how they could help pull things together. Do you have a community development authority? The CDA? We should just talk about the formation of a CDA, because what a community development authority has the authority to do, and there are a lot of small villages that have them. Essentially, the Community Development Authority, which is under the control of the local government because its majority of its members are appointed by the municipality, is they have the right to make direct deals with developers. And they can do that in a somewhat proprietary and confidential manner. And the assumption is that the village trusts the CDA to behave in the village's interest, but then the CDA can sit down with developers across the table and make deals, which is a really important thing to do. And so we can talk to you about, I've seen some CDAs work in an adversarial way to the Plan Commission, which is obviously not good, but they can also work in a very positive way.
Let me just check with the public one more time. Anybody else in the public have any more comments? All right, thank you for your input. Hearing now, I'll resume the rulings. Anybody else from the village board or the plan commission have any questions or comments that they'd like to explore?
One of the first comments you made was, recommendation was to make sure whatever we decide on and approve is built into our comp plan as an amendment. And so that'd be real important going forward to have that to show somebody saying, yeah, we're what you see here, but it's what you see in our comp plan. We all agree this is the way we want to do it. Comp plan, it's what it's for. So a good first step before we get into too much detail is to focus on how to do that.
Maybe. Well, the adoption is not that complicated, but the reason for it is when the state legislature changed the planning rules about 10 years ago, they said that everything needed to be consistent with the comp plan. Nobody ever said that before. And then they went on to define that as meaning zoning, conditional use permits, land divisions, annexations. It was a long list. And so that's what tells the developers and the property owners that you're serious about it. So the act of amending the plan is fairly simple. You have to have the hearings and all that. But then the act of determining what is consistent with it is not so simple.
Any other questions, comments from the board? Hearing none,
I'll just make one last comment.
Sure.
Notwithstanding some of the public comments, but there has been, in the development of our comp plan and the development of our visioning, community visioning, and in the development of this proposed plan, there's been a lot of public participation, and many of the, I'll call them new urban elements that we're seeing in all three documents, things that pursue more pedestrian, a little quieter type of transportation goals, things like that, have involved lots of people in the community who have expressed a desire for these things. And I recall hearing lots of objections to things like bike lanes on Riverside Drive, but the truth is, those are the things that the community has already sat down and said, we want these things. They're in our documents. It says we want better bicycle transportation, we want better pedestrian transportation, we want little downtown areas, we want places for people to walk to. So, and we want a more qualitative lifestyle, a quieter lifestyle. We want to keep that quiet character to our community. So that's all there. And I think we should reinforce that as we move forward in assessing this plan with the others that we have. So.
Excellent comment. Any further comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Why don't you make that, Mr. Collada, since I understand this is your last he can still do that. Yeah. He can still adjourn the joint meeting. All right, is there a second? Trustee Harris, any discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Meeting adjourned.